in people who have been vaccinated. Now, I don't want to instill any fear in anyone. You can still appeal to the great physician, Jesus Christ. You can speak that healing over yourself that he paid for on the cross. And there are other protocols as well. And we're going to actually, the next couple of weeks, we're going to try to get some of these folks on that have successfully treated those who have been vaxxed and know something is very wrong. So Died Suddenly is talking about the implications of what if, it's answering this question, what if the vaccine was the pandemic? What if the vaccine was the attempt at population reduction on a massive genocidal scale? Quote, this time the genocide will be televised, end quote, Stu Peters promises. It answers this question. So check this out. You've got time over Thanksgiving. We can all watch a movie over Thanksgiving. And one of the great things, too, is you don't have to go to Black Friday and go to combat at Walmart or something like that. You can actually be educated on this, share it with your friends and family. But again, no fear. We're going to have on Patriot Radio in the next few weeks some of the people that have successfully treated those that have been vaxxed and talk about some of the things that you can do. And obviously, the very first thing is you're praying about it. Jesus Christ said that he paid for our sicknesses. And it was, you can read it in Isaiah too, that our sicknesses he bore on the cross. So don't be scared about this if you got vaxxed. Okay? But this is a warning. There's a reason people like Bill Gates are involved in vaccinations. And this movie seeks to answer these questions. Why are they involved? What does this mean for everyone? Are they really pursuing population reduction on a genocidal scale? Is the human body actually resilient to COVID? By the way, the answer is yes. Natural immunity is far more effective. And then fifth, who's behind this? So Died Suddenly, watch it. Stu Peters Network, strongly recommend you check it out. All right, we're going to move next to the international front. Wow. All right, so we're going to start with Euromaidan Press. And I want to, again, paint a picture of what's happening, give you some implications, and then I'm going to move to a couple other international things because war is spreading now beyond the borders of Ukraine. There is destabilization happening across the Middle East and Eastern Europe. We're going to talk about that right now. Look, we need to be open to objective analysis, regardless of the emotions coming into this stuff. Now, I appreciate some guys, they think they know what the narrative is, but they really, in a lot of ways, don't. You know, and this whole thing over these missiles landing in Poland, was it Russian? Was it Ukrainian? And people are now saying, oh, it was Ukrainian, even though they missed something huge. And I'm going to go through what that is here in a second. You're going to hear this. And what I think happened and what several other experts think actually happened. You have to ask yourself a couple questions out of this. You know, NATO had the opportunity to try to start World War III. Why didn't they? Right? Why didn't they do it? They could have used it as a pretext. Why didn't they do it? All right. So going Euromaidan Press, day 272 of the war. I just want to go through the battle damage assessments here. Now, again, the Russians have had massive losses in Kharkiv and Luhansk, massive losses in Kherson. Those are objective statements. They lost. All right. And they not only have lost personnel, we're going to get to what that is here in a second, but they've also lost equipment. And that's really what I'm looking at right now. The Russians have very likely lost over 85,000 troops dead. It's not just wounded, dead. Okay. Now, tanks, I want to paint a picture. In the Russian military prior to the war, now they've tried to get some tanks from Belarus, so this doesn't include that number, but prior to the war, Russia had about 3,300 tanks and about 14,000 armored personnel carriers, give or take 100 or so. They went into their boneyards and they started to pull out what are called T-62 tanks, and they're 1962. These are very old tanks. They have to modify them. They had manual turrets where guys would crank literally inside the thing and the turret would just slowly, you know, move all the way around. Slow. So anybody that has an electronic turret, you're going to outgun these T-62s anytime. So they had to pull out of their boneyard. So this doesn't include those numbers either. Doesn't include the numbers of tanks that are down for maintenance issues and logistics problems, which are notorious in the Russian army, as you've heard ad nauseum on this show. But 3,300 tanks, according to several sources, not just one, several sources, objective evidence, in other words, video or picture evidence, and the reported battle damage losses with captured equipment. So tanks, APCs that have also been captured. Russian losses of tanks are at around 2,900 tanks out of 3,300 in their whole military. Travis, you want to do the math on that real quick? Give me a percentage. So 3,300 tanks, 2,900. Now, captured or destroyed of the original number known in the Russian military, the whole military. Armored personnel carriers, they're approaching now at 5,800 out of about 14,000. So just math on the loss of Russian armor tells us, and Russian personnel, tells us that they're approaching, and this is the key point, again, objectively speaking, a decision point. Travis, what was the percentage? 87% of the Russian armored force destroyed or captured. Of their whole military. That means that they have ceased to exist as a first-tier peer fighting force, with one exception, and that's nuclear weapons. They're almost out of missiles, too, by the way. That's why they keep just launching them for a few days and then waiting and launching it for a few days and waiting. And we're going to get to the missile thing here in a second. All right, so just with objective numbers, you've got over 40% of their armored personnel carriers lost, destroyed, out for maintenance. 87% of their tanks. This is why Putin is getting somewhat desperate, but also why it would justify some of the things that happened this last week. All right, so I'm going to get into that right now. So there's a few things that happened. Coming to you from Open Source Intelligence. And again, just check this out for yourself. I've posted a ton online. Sawyer's doing a fantastic job posting across on Gab. Whatever your favorite social media site is, go there. It should all be cross-posted now, and you can go through these threads. And we're going to go through every place from Brazil to Syria to Iran. We're going to go through all of it right now, and Serbia, okay, and Kosovo. All right, so according to Open Source Intelligence, Poland and Germany announced that they were going to nationalize the Gazprom assets. That's by a different company name, but it's still Gazprom assets in Poland and Germany. The same day, that is when these one or two, there's still some debate even over that, missiles landed in eastern Poland. Now, Trent Tolenko has done a fantastic job of just going through basic analysis of some of the things that are happening, from logistics, stuff that people don't pay attention to, like palletization, and the fact that the Russians lack palletization, therefore they lack the ability to move massive quantities of ammunition and artillery to the front lines, and therefore they are losing the war and will lose the war and already have lost the war in many respects. Just those kind of just objective things. Again, nobody's justifying either side. I'm just giving you objective facts here. So this missile that landed, everybody was up in arms saying, oh, the Ukrainians tried to drag NATO into war and all of these kind of things. Here is where I want to go with this. So Trent posted an analysis of the fusing of an S-300 missile. Now, if you're going to be like, why does that even matter? Here's why. Because there are three fusings on an air defense missile. You have a proximity fuse. You have essentially, we'll call it like an emergency fuse. So if it's errant, it will blow up if it misses its target. Call it a safety or emergency fuse. And then it has a ground-to-ground impact fuse. Okay? If it is actually an errant air defense missile, this raises tons of questions. Because we need to ask what happened to the missile, emergency or safety fuse, that it did not blow up when it missed the target. Because it hit the ground and created a crater. So far, nobody has been able to answer that question, the fusing question. The second issue that you have is, let's say it actually was going after an air target, like a cruise missile, for example. And let's say it exploded near the cruise missile with a proximity fuse, which is what these air defense missiles do. Then why wouldn't there have been evidence of the proximity fuse raining down on top of the tractor in Poland? And you can look at the pictures. There is nothing raining down on the tractor in Poland. So this now brings up a couple of issues. If it wasn't an emergency fuse and it wasn't a proximity detonation, then it was a ground-to-ground impact fusing, which only the Russians at that time were using and probably came from maybe Belarus. So what would the target have been? Well, this is the interesting part that nobody online is talking about. And, you know, I will just ask Jack Posobiec and some of these guys, take a look at this stuff. There is a hub right near this farm, right inside Ukraine, near this farm in Poland, that is an electrical grid hub where most of the power is coming into Ukraine from Europe. Of course, that would have been a target. That's what the Russian missile barrages have been attacking, is these electrical grid hubs throughout the country trying to take down and degrade Ukrainian electrical infrastructure. So, Travis, if you could find this thread from Trent Tolenko, there's actually two of them. One is on radar, and then the other one is on this type of fusing in the missile system. So put that up there on there so people can actually read this for yourselves. It's a 20, I think it's like 24 post thread. Again, Trent Tolenko. Just read it for yourself and look at the map at the end, which I think is the most compelling. Look at the map at the end and see where the proximity of this electrical grid hub is to where this farm is. Very clearly, it looks like the Russians missed their target. So then the question becomes, because again, totally objective, this wasn't an emergency fuse. It could not have been a proximity fuse because there was nothing vertically coming down on this tractor. So it had to have been a ground impact fuse that the Russians had already been modifying some of their S-300 missiles to do exactly this. This 5V55K missile design You can read about this. This is the technical term now. If that's the case and they missed, now that makes sense. Why did they fire the missile barrage on that day? Okay, because Poland and Germany are nationalizing Gazprom assets, because they just lost Kherson, because Crimea is now being attacked by Ukrainian artillery. Yes, you heard that right. Because they lost Kherson, if you look at the map, the Kinmen split right, or spit, excuse me, right down below that, which controls the mouth of the harbor that comes in there. Ukrainian Special Forces has already landed there. They've been fighting from the east to the west on Crimea, and now Crimea is in range of Ukrainian artillery. Of course, they're going to try to fight back, and of course, they're going to launch a missile barrage. This just makes sense. But now the question becomes, why did NATO cover that up? Why did NATO try to change the narrative midstream? Because they didn't want World War III. Or is there some other reason? Is there some other reason? Is it because of China? Is it because the globalists didn't want to do it now? Now this changes the narrative completely, and we start asking the right questions. Why was the timing not right right now? Is China about to do something in Taiwan? And I think, yes, all the evidence points toward that. Forward Observer has been keeping great tabs on this. All the evidence points toward China attacking Taiwan first. Why? Because the longer we wait, the longer the Chinese wait, and the longer the United States waits with this back and forth foreign policy, the more Japan is going to militarize, the more South Korea is going to militarize, and the less time China actually has. So a strong America would actually stop China from invading, just like if Trump was in office, the Russians would have not invaded Ukraine. Which now brings us to some updates. And we're going to go next to what's happening in Serbia. Now, you can read about this from several different sources. I'm just going to kind of try to give you an idea on kind of the overview here. Serbia and Kosovo, they've been fighting for a very long time, and this goes back hundreds and hundreds of years, okay? It essentially was a Muslim versus Christian war there. That is the history. No one denies it. That is reasonable as a scholar. So as a result of that, there has been tension ever since. And then there was the Bosnian War, and just where you had the Serbians and Croatians and Bosnians going at it in 1995 to 2000. Yours truly was over there in 2000. Now, in 2000, it was obviously an attempt at keeping just peace there, but there was still going out. There's still tension. Well, that tension has now raised, and talks have failed between Serbia and Kosovo, and the increased likelihood. Did you find that post on Twitter? That increased likelihood of a conflict there is showing that Serbia, which is a Russian proxy by some account, by most accounts, could expand this war beyond the borders of Ukraine now to Serbia, Kosovo, which again is a distraction for us in Europe away from what the Chinese might be doing in Taiwan, because right now we do not have the logistical capability. We could if we wanted to, but we don't right now to fight a war on two fronts. So it's going to give you that broad overview. So now it looks like this is spreading into Serbia, Kosovo. Now, I just want to say something about Serbia. First of all, the United States sold out somebody who in World War II was on the U.S. side, was a person of freedom. Now, people didn't necessarily agree with his tactics. He was accused of all kinds of things. I'm just giving you the history of it. His name was Draza Mihailovic. And they sold him out for Tito, who was a communist. This was communist elements inside the United States government. Again, 329 confirmed Soviet agents in the United States government during the Roosevelt administration that we know of now, confirmed through the Venona transcripts and the Matroikan archives, among many other sources. All right. So the Allies missed a chance to have the Yugoslavian region, the southern Slavian region, allied with freedom and liberty. And instead, now we're still fighting World War II all these years later. Which brings us to the next thing and the next spread right now. And this is very, very serious. I want everybody to pay attention. Turkish president, this is OSINT defender. Turkish President Erdogan announced today that Turkish forces will soon begin a large-scale ground operation in Syria. Apparently, some Kurdish Syrian forces went into southern Turkey, and now Erdogan is going to send tanks, infantry supported by Turkish air assets. We're going to strike targets inside of Syria, coming to us from open source intelligence. In addition, the U.S. Department of Defense has said that ongoing fighting between Turkey, Syria, and Kurdish forces must cease. These actions threaten our shared goals. They're afraid of a continued spillover of that war. Which brings us to Iran. The protests now there are violent. Some elements of the military now have, in fact, gone over to the protesters' side, open source intelligence and others. And Travis, you can find that there's a thread a couple below that. Claire Lopez has been kind of following this too. But the bottom line is this. The regime in Iran's days are numbered. We don't know what's going to exactly come out of that. Wouldn't expect huge things out of it. But the situation right now in Iran is developing very quickly. Because the military has sided with some of the protesters, and these are elements of the military, not the whole military, and also because elements of the military are also firing on unarmed protesters, and now those videos are coming out as well. So that area is now destabilizing rapidly in Iran, which we talked about last March, February, March on this show. Watch Russia, Ukraine, then watch for Iran, which is happening now. And watch for this to continue to spill over. Watch for what China does right now in the middle of this. Which brings us to Brazil. Millions protesting in Brazil. The results of the election and the attempted communist takeover there in that country. Main ports are being forced to halt operations as truck drivers continue to protest, leaving hundreds of ships anchored at the ports. If you could bring up that map that shows, Travis, the all the ships that are backed up there right off of Brazil, pretty incredible numbers. Also, some clear videos showing voter machines being moved, also coming out of Brazil, and the Brazilian military now saying that they can't say that the election was free and fair. And people are asking the military to preside over an actual free and fair election. So Brazil right now having the fight of its life for freedom and liberty, coming to us from open source intelligence. Brazil's Bolsonaro has filed an official complaint to challenge the presidential election results, and protests continue across Brazil. I want to go back to China for a second. China has begun to shut down parks, museums, entertainment venues, and other public areas in many cities as a result of the ongoing zero COVID policies. So what we are seeing right now is a cover. COVID lockdowns in China is a cover to stifle dissent in China, but also a cover for economic warfare, I believe, against the United States of America. Because these shutdowns now in China mean that those goods are not coming to the United States of America, which again underscores our need to become self-reliant, independent, to bring back manufacturing to the United States, to get these ridiculous greenhouse gas regulations out of the way, so this country can be ready for what very clearly appears like we are headed toward a world war right now. Last but not least, do the Chinese communists own the White House and magazine? I want you to read this article when you get a chance over the Thanksgiving holiday. This just means for all of us at the local level, we need to be redoubling our efforts as business owners, as pastors, as leaders, as productive members of this community, as Christians and patriots. We need to be redoubling our efforts at the local level. We need to make sure we can say our area is free from the Chinese influence. Our area is free from Chinese corruption. Our area is free from jihadi infiltration. That is how we will weather this storm, as we have always weathered storms as Americans. Together, as a liberty-loving people that will always fight for freedom. And that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody who's been praying for us. And make sure you go onto your favorite social media site, whether that's Gab, MeWe, Getter, Parler, Clout Hub. I'm almost losing track, Travis, of everything we're on. Twitter. And share it. Just hit the like button for us. If you can, just hit the like button for us. Hit like, hit share, and spread the gospel of the kingdom to your friends and family. Get them educated on these issues. Also, we're on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, and Amazon. You can always share that. I want to just say a thank you to everybody in the trucking industry that's driving across America right now listening to Patriot Radio. We love you. Thank you for spreading the word here as well. And lastly, if you need real news, go to Epoch Times, and you can go to iReadEpoch.com, promo code Patriot Radio. You get to support two good causes with one click. And last but not least, I want to do a special shout out to somebody that has been a true help and sponsor just for the whole ministry here. Are you on Medicare? McCarty Insurance specializes in the Medicare field, Medicare Advantage, Medicare Supplement, and prescription drug plans. Do you have questions about your current plan? Call Dean or Betty at 509-218-1891. That's 509-218-1891. And remember, worry about nothing, pray about everything. 509-218-1891. And we just wanted to give a shout out to our friends there, Betty and Dean. And that brings us now to our guest today, pastor, patriot, doctor, I guess. I don't know. I mean, you got so many titles and so many things you're involved in. It's fantastic. Dr. Mark Sherwood and his wife, Michelle, they have successfully treated 10,000 COVID patients, resulting in zero deaths. He's a former Oklahoma State and regional bodybuilding champion, ex-professional baseball player, and a 24-year retired veteran of the Tulsa Police Department, where he logged a decade of courageous service on the department's SWAT team. Dr. Sherwood is a forerunner in the Patriot and Christian movement. Thanks for being on Patriot Radio today. God bless you.
Hey, God bless you too, man. I appreciate you having me. I'm super honored to be with you. Thanks for having me.
I know you don't like those long introductions, but you know, people got to know who you are. So.
I'm grateful, man. All glory goes to God, man. You know how that is.
It is, and he uses us vessels however he wants to. So let's talk about
indeed.
Let's talk about this new video out, Died Suddenly. I mean, people have been just saying, hey, did we really need the vax for this to fight COVID, or was this just kind of a glorified cold? And I don't want to overplay anything or underplay anything. Kind of give the listeners a little bit of context, history, and framework from which we can start the discussion here.
Well, first of all, let's understand that there is a virus. There's something out there that is inducing the immune system to respond. So we know there is viruses that live among us, as we like to say. There's parasites, bacteria, all of these things. We live in a symbiotic relationship with it. And contextually, it's very important to understand that God did not create us and put us on this earth so that we would be destroyed by something within the earth, which he also created. So there must have been some kind of divine design so that we would live together with these things. So our body's immune systems really are in two areas, the innate system and the adaptive system. So the innate system is something that's sort of passed down, and the adaptive system is something that gets adjusted or adapted during the time it gets exposed. Adaptive immunity kind of begins like a person might build muscles. You know, you have to exercise it. It has to face resistance. And that's kind of how it works. So in this idea of the COVID situation that we had, my biggest concern was at the time, going back to March, is that we had a tremendously immunocompromised society. Now, that was a problem, because anytime you induce another action of the immune system, it triggers more inflammation. And if you already have an immunocompromised, overinflamed system, it causes an overreaction. And you get a lot of these symptoms. You don't get this adaptive immunity response like you should. Now, with that said, I will say that I do believe the virus was a created gain of function, modified, sort of synthesized in the lab. I think there's a little argument about that at this point. Whether it was clear biological warfare or was accidentally released, I think they're still up for debate on that. But ultimately, there's something. Did it require a vaccine? I feel no, because ultimately nobody addressed the elephant in the room, which was our immunocompromised society. I thought that and still think that Operation Warp Speed, in my opinion, was one of the worst decisions we've ever made. And we should not be proud of that. Anytime you do something of that global nature in a hurry, you're bound to make mistakes. And I think that the way we did that, how we did it, our target of how we dealt with the virus was completely off.
So let's talk about this. How should this have been dealt with? And, you know, this was the worst mistake President Trump made. I mean, we need to be honest about that. How should this have been dealt with? Because masks, for anybody that has been military trained on nuclear, biological, chemical warfare, you know, paper mask was just, it was ridiculous in the outset. And, you know, the fact that there was 40 years worth of documentation that seemed to be shelved, people were like, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense at all. So how should this have been handled?
Well, yeah, you're on the mask. You know, you look on the box of those masks, which are probably mostly manufactured in China, just FYI. They say they will not protect you from viruses. It's kind of an odd deal. But no, I mean, I just shoot from the hip and let my emotions run raw right now with this, because I can tell you exactly how I felt and how I felt it should be handled, because I dealt with that in March of 2020, even late February 2020, is still as real today as it was then. I remember the rawness in my heart when I heard our politicians, our pastors, our medical people talking about fear. And it went right through me like a dagger, because I thought, this is not from God. Anytime someone leads with fear, the statements that follow are not from God. In other words, they're not godly oriented or godly statements, because they don't run through a godly process. And so I would have hoped that someone would have stood up and said, my fellow Americans, we don't know what we're dealing with. We don't know if this is a purposeful release under the idea of biological warfare. We're going to find out. And when we find out, if that's the case, and when we identify our enemy, we're going to crush them. We're going to do always what we have been done as Americans. We're going to crush the enemy, but we're going to clearly identify them, and we're going to bond together as citizens to do that. If it's not biological warfare release, we're still going to figure it out, but we're not going to panic. We're not going to panic. I don't know what we're dealing with, quite frankly, but I want you to take care of yourself. I want you to ensure that you eat a good diet, that you get plenty of rest, that you hang around your loved ones, that you stay off of negative media, that you don't listen to fear, that you move frequently, you get out in some sunshine. Make sure your vitamin D is up to speed. Make sure your vitamin C, make sure your omega-3s are there. And we're going to go through this together as we've always gone through this together. And we're not only going to get through it, we're going to learn through it, and we're going to grow through it. That's what I would have hoped would happen. And man, did we ever get there? Resoundingly, no.
No. And, you know, now they're admitting that, well, that ivermectin thingy, that was just a recommendation that you don't take it. Just a recommendation. I mean, clearly it wasn't at the time. And I mean, they were dumping everything against anybody that was taking ivermectin or recommending taking ivermectin. People were losing medical licenses as a result of it. So this idea now that was just a recommendation, I'd like you to comment on that and the efficacy of potential treatments like ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine in the worst case scenarios.
Well, they were recommending against it. I think we all can deduce and reasonably gather now, because it was all about money, the vaccines, and everything was driven by money. And if you look at it, and again, you do a very good job, and I want to commend you of connecting the dots in a very honest, investigative manner. Let people make their call. Let's understand this fact that most politicians, even those that we want in office, take large, large sums of money from Big Pharma. They don't come out against Big Pharma because Big Pharma is controlling them by money. And they don't come out against Big Pharma advertising to our public. We're one of the few countries in the world that even allowed that nonsense. And I don't know about you, but I'm tired of Big Pharma interrupting my favorite sporting event, just saying. So the bottom line is, I believe that these politicians, the majority of them, I'm talking about both Democrats and Republicans, are very compromised in their ability to rationally and reasonably deal with things such as this particular outbreak. When you look at these therapeutics that were out there, they didn't go there for a couple of reasons. Number one was money. Number two is, you look at FDA regulations, and I think people need to understand this. Things like hydroxychloroquine are not FDA approved, and I'm using their terms, and I'll explain my answer, to treat COVID-19. They are FDA approved to treat lupus and malaria. Now, when the FDA sort of brings about the potential for approval, there are studies that are conducted on that area. So when you go out there and you say things like this, hydroxychloroquine is a cure, you just violated the very rules of the FDA, because you cannot say it's a cure because there's been no studies that say it's approved as a cure. Now, if the language would have been something like this, look, we have used hydroxychloroquine with success. It is not FDA approved. It is used off label. In other words, we're using it out of FDA design purpose, and we have had some success. If they'd have said that and kept kind of that line, we would have probably had better usage of some of these therapeutics, like an ivermectin, like a hydroxychloroquine, like a budesonide, like an azithromycin, instead of what we had. We had people out there getting very aggressive and saying it's a cure. Now, whether it's a cure or not is irrelevant to my discussion. But what is true is that using the wrong language at the wrong time brings the wrong type of attention. And it did. And it created a big old mess of problems. And it was just asking for problems, asking for troubles. And you're already fighting against a system that is not really about keeping people well, but right, getting people managed by disease. So that's a little bit of information on that.
So let's dive a little bit more into this part of it. We had a lot of use of ventilators, for example, and other things where, you know, people were asking for ivermectin, they didn't get it. They were, you know, instead you're going on the vent and you're going on a drug that in clear studies looked like it probably needed a lot more work. I'll just be really diplomatic in saying that. And, you know, these studies, nobody disputed that, right? So describe a little bit on just treatment protocols. You know, normally, at least when I was growing up, I don't want to sound too old here, but I mean, when I was growing up, it was eat right, exercise, right? And that's like the majority of your health. And we somehow have just dumped that to the side. And so how does that also play into this with treatment protocols as well?
People need to understand, this is kind of the dirty little secret that they don't want you to know. And it's this, is that these big systems that used to be nonprofit, I'm talking about health systems, are now for-profit. Well, the typical concept from that is if they're for-profit, that means that they have to make money to survive. What creates profitability is sick people. And where do they get their money from? They get money from the federal government. And the federal government doesn't just give money away. The federal government will basically give money away with strings because they want loyalty. And so these systems became for-profit and began to employ doctors, nurses, healthcare workers as basically pawns in their game, to create profit. And profits became more valuable and more important than people. That's a hard statement, and it's gut-wrenching to hear. And here's why I say that, because in our day of growing up, it was different. Remember the old day where the primary care physician would go visit you at the hospital, and that was part of their job, making their rounds? It doesn't work like that anymore. Once a person ends up in the hospital, they become seen and cared for by the hospitalist or the attending physician, and that becomes their patient, and it's under their guidelines. But the doctors today in the hospitals don't have the autonomy to do these broad-based protocols because the powers that be above them are guiding the protocols, and that's what they do in that hospital. So patients should have the right through patient autonomy to be able to refuse care, to be able to pick alternate care. And that's what should have happened. But we were intimidated. We were intimidated so much that we didn't stand up and we didn't have patient advocacy because the patient advocacy was not there because, again, we couldn't allow somebody in a room because, God forbid, they might have a virus that it could only work 6 feet high and you had to wear a mask that didn't work anyway. So the bottom line is it was messed up and screwed up from the beginning. And now you see that, and my wife is conventionally medically trained. She's an osteopathic doctor, and I'm a naturopath. And I can tell you that doctors today are not trained in nutrition as a mainline therapy. They're trained in algorithmic medicine, where the algorithm lines out to what drug is there, and it's a pill for an ill. But as I've said many times, publicly and privately, a pill for an ill is not God's will. So this whole idea and process got completely off years ago when we started valuing money, and the love of money is indeed the root of all evil. So I think that's the root cause of all of this.
I think so too. And just, you know, just reading back through history, there were many people that kept journals about what worked as far as diet, what worked as far as vitamins. But I mean, this is thousands of years literally back where these were kept. And so then all of a sudden we ignore it here in the modern time because we're somehow smarter, but that's really not the case, obviously. So I want to go to the last kind of controversial subject, and that is the vaccine. So much coming out about the vaccine, and I just want to get your objective opinion on that. And also, there's a lot of people that are, hey, you know, what do I do? I got the vaccine. I got the first shot. What do I do? How can I be healthy? How can I mitigate any possible adverse effects?
Well, let's answer the second question first. And really, I want to give people out there a little confidence. Okay, you got the first shot. You've had buyer's remorse. You wish you didn't do it. I want to direct your attention to Mark chapter 16, where Jesus was talking to his disciples. And one of the things he said to them before he ascended into heaven was that you may drink deadly poison and it will not harm you. So hold on to that verse, hold on to that scripture, because fear doesn't do you any good. My objective opinion about the vaccine is this. When I look at the vaccine, they were basing the vaccine on the unique framework or shape of the spike protein that is characteristic of COVID-19. Spike protein is a unique characteristic or a unique appendage, if you will, upon the virus. And so the thought was, let's create an mRNA vaccine, which is modifying our genetic transcription speed and agenda and language to create a bunch of spikes, so that when you create the spikes, the body will see the spike and it will adapt and build antibodies against the spike. Well, the problem with that is the spike actually becomes the pathogen. It's actually the problem. Yep. And so when you do the mRNA vaccines that have this you know, unknown number of spikes create for an unknown period of time that modifies your own DNA, you create this enormous amount of these pathogens, these spikes that actually bind into these ACE2 receptors. Now, ACE2 stands for angiotensin converting enzyme 2. And these receptors are all over our cardiac muscle, all over the inside of our vascular, our arterial lining called endothelium. They're in our lungs. They're up here in our nasal pharyngeal area. There's some in our stomach. There's some in our sex organs as well. And those spikes are binding in there. Boom, they're binding in there. They're binding in there. They're binding in there. And the more spikes we create, the more long-term potential effects we have. And so these spikes are actually the problem. And a little side over note with that is that this technology, mRNA, is not a new technology, but it had never, ever been rolled out to that level on that many people before. And the absurd way we went about that to roll this out globally without long-term studies, I just think that that's inexcusable. It's inexcusable. And now, because we got in a hurry, Operation Warp Speed, we had the wrong target protein to look at. We had this vaccine that had been unproven and had never been rolled out that broad in that many people. And it hasn't been tested out over time to see how long the spike proteins create and was that the real problem. Now we've got this four-pronged problem that people are dealing with today. The question I get asked a lot is, do they create clots? Well, it's a combo answer. The answer is, anytime those spikes hit those ACE2 receptors, it increases the clotting potential. But when you have a system that is already inflamed and already has damaged endothelial tissue, it increases the potential for clots. So you have this countrywide, nationwide, worldwide immunocompromised, overinflamed individual now having these spikes put in them. So what's our response? Whether you've been vaccinated or not, you've got to do the things that you talked about. You got to eat right, exercise, pray right, sleep right, rest right, hang around the right people, listen to Patriot Radio, you know, get some good information, and really make sure that you don't create extra inflammation or extra immune inducing effects in your body.
So let's talk about that. We've got about a minute and a half left. So in that last minute and a half, okay, what can people be doing right now specifically? And secondly, where can they go to learn more about you and get more information about Dr. Mark Sherwin?
Well, they've got to eat right. They've got to eat real food. And if God made it, eat it. If he didn't make it, it never was food. It's inflammatory. You got to take the right supplements. You can go to Sherwood.tv, and we've got our own immune support packs we built for this, and we've got other things that are there so people can use that. You got to exercise. You got to get some sunshine. You got to get around people that are going to lift you up and not tear you down. And you cannot, absolutely cannot live in fear. And this is super important. And we deal with people all over the country and all over the world and teach them these principles like this. And when we do, they get better. And so far, you know, praise the Lord, he gets all the glory. We've had no one die. And of that many thousands, there's a few of them that got vaccinated because they just chose to. And that's their call, not mine. But we've got to keep encouraging each other to stand together and not allow this thing to become more than it already is.
Amen. Dr. Mark Sherwood, thanks for joining me on Patriot Radio today. We'd love to have you on again. God bless you. And
yes, sir,
really appreciate your courageous stand, not just here, but I know your courageous stand in Oklahoma as well. God bless.
God bless you. Thanks for having me.
All right, Dr. Mark Sherwood. And if you want to check that out, Sherwood.tv, and Travis is putting that up right now. Look at the way that he approaches health. The way that he approaches health is what we should all be doing. And it doesn't matter if you've been vaxxed or not, as much as, are you doing the things to reduce inflammation in your body? Are you doing the things that are going to expand lung capacity? Are you doing the things that are going to expand the amount of vitamin D3 in your system? Are you doing those things that everybody knows, if you've studied nutrition at any time, that we should be doing? And it's all right there on one website. So thanks for putting that up, Travis. I appreciate that. I just want to say in the last 45 seconds we've got about Thanksgiving. I started the show with this. I'm going to end the show with this. Take a moment. We got a special Thanksgiving show with our friend, Pastor Pavel Hoyeski, who helped us get the orphans out of Ukraine to safety in Poland here last March. So with Pastor Hoyeski, say a prayer for him, but also take a moment, bless your family, say, Lord, I am specifically thankful for these things that you have done for me this year. Go around the table, bless each other, bless God, and truly have a happy Thanksgiving. I think it's one of the best holidays. This is Matt Shea. Thank you for joining me on Patriot Radio today. May God bless all of you. And he is making this generation the greatest one. Keep up the fight.